This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 166 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. It's important to not only look at the results. Now, if you're listening to this podcast each week, then you're probably not the type of person that I need to say that to. You know that volume is important in fantasy football, and that digging into snap counts, market share numbers, air yard profiles, and so on is far more effective for predicting what's to come versus simply looking at how a player scored in the fantasy points column. That's why when things like Chris Hogan's week 2 happen, I'm not really that upset. It's hard to beat yourself up over benching Chris Hogan last week. He caught just 3 passes, but he happened to find the end zone twice. It's unfortunate and it sucks that he might not have been in your lineup, but your process for benching him was not wrong. My process for telling you to bench him was not wrong. And it's no different on the opposite end either. I thought a deep play at running back last week was Nyheim Hines, just in case that game got away from Indianapolis. Hines ended up scoring a touchdown, but hell no, I'm not happy about my recommendation. Hines only had 4 carries and 1 target. I was wrong plenty last week. I didn't like Andy Dalton, and he went off on Thursday night. I liked Case Keenum as a deeper play, and he was lucky to come through with a competent fantasy performance. And then I missed on Amari Cooper, Mike Wallace got hurt, and Alfred Morris. But things weren't all that bad. Big Ben ended up being the QB1. I touted Chris Thompson over Adrian Peterson. Peyton Barber and LeSean McCoy sucked again. And Tyler Lockett decided to come out of retirement in the second half against Chicago, and he did some things. Overall, Week 2's matchups episode probably wasn't as strong as Week 1's, but the results weren't too bad given that we're talking about a lot of fringe players. I'm satisfied. Thus far, I feel pretty good. But now it's time to move on to Week 3. Before we do, though, I wanted to remind you guys about NumberFire Premium. With NumberFire Premium, you can get awesome daily fantasy football tools, gambling predictions, and great premium content from NumberFire's brilliant writers. All Late Round Podcast listeners get their first month of any level of premium access for just $9.99 with promo code CHAMPION. For more info, visit numberfire.com/premium. That's numberfire.com/premium. So far this year, Jimmy Garoppolo has given us a QB22 performance and a QB16 performance. In a world where so many quarterbacks are just lighting it up, that's less than ideal. But he's got a near ideal matchup in Week 3. The Chiefs, his opponent, have allowed 29 fantasy points to Phillip Rivers and then 39 to Big Ben across their first 2 games, and they are the current owners of the worst secondary in football according to NumberFire's expected points model. According to the metric, Kansas City has allowed roughly 36 more real points, not fantasy points, than an average secondary would have across the first 2 games. That's absolutely bananas. The game in Kansas City this weekend has the highest over-under on the entire slate, and you're going to want to have a piece of that, so don't be afraid at all to trot out Jimmy G, who has top 5 upside this week. And then there's also Ryan Fitzpatrick, who should be in store for another strong performance in Week 3. Now, we definitely shouldn't expect Fitzpatrick to just keep doing what he's doing. And what he's doing is converting on over 70% of his deep balls, with 28% of his passes traveling 15 or more air yards. Those numbers are not sustainable whatsoever. The thing is, though, through 2 weeks, only 4 teams have allowed more big plays through the air than Pittsburgh has. And that includes 1 game in a rainstorm in Cleveland. The Steelers have sincere issues on the defensive side of the ball, and like Jimmy Garoppolo, Ryan Fitzpatrick is the starting quarterback in a game with one of the highest over-unders on the week. And something else going in Fitz's favor, and in favor of this game being high scoring, is the fact that Pittsburgh has been really, really pass happy to start the year. In neutral game scripts, only Detroit has a higher pass to rush ratio. And Pittsburgh has one of the highest overall pass to rush ratios in general, too. So that could add to the number of plays run in this contest. So overall, Ryan Fitzpatrick, to me, is a QB1 this week. Now, I wasn't into Russell Wilson last week because of the brutal Chicago defense, and I'm not into him this week for somewhat similar reasons. I'm just scared that this Seattle-Dallas game isn't going to be very high scoring. You've got 2 teams who have been running at a slow pace, with Dallas ranking 30th in seconds per play and Seattle ranking 22nd. And as a result, they both rank in the bottom 5 in total plays run. And I'm sincerely worried about the Seahawks offensive line in this game. Dallas ranks 2nd in the NFL in sacks, and they're a top 10 defensive unit according to NumberFire's metrics. Seattle's then allowed the most sacks in the league to start the year. It just really sets up to be an ugly game, and without reliable pass catchers for Russell Wilson, I think that you can sit him even though he's at home. To me, he's more of a mid-range QB2 or maybe even a lower-end QB2 this week. I also think it's going to be tough to start Phillip Rivers. The Rams have been awesome defensively to start the year, which isn't much of a surprise considering their personnel. And they may not have been playing the best offenses against Oakland and Arizona, but throwing into that defensive line and those cornerbacks is no easy task. That's why they currently rank third in NumberFire's schedule-adjusted pass defense rankings. Rivers has been good, but he's also faced the aforementioned Chiefs and then the Buffalo Bills. It's not like he's been severely tested. And with so many good quarterback options this week, he becomes a little less appetizing. For the deeper play this week, I'm pretty intrigued by Blake Bortles. Tennessee has allowed four passing scores to Ryan Tannehill and Deshaun Watson to start the year, and they've allowed the highest average depth of target in football. That's why we've seen big plays against the Titans. And part of that reason is Malcolm Butler. According to Pro Football Focus, Butler has allowed the most yards in the league to start the year, and only nine players have faced more targets. Meanwhile, Bortles has thrown it deep on 19% of his passes this year, which is about league average, but it's well above his career average. Bortles has the matchup and is a decent streamer here in week three. At running back, I'm kind of digging the Dolphins' rushing attack this week. Clearly, Kenyon Drake would be the player that you want. He's seen 42% of the team's rushes, he's been on the field for about 67% of their snaps, and he has a 16% target share. Frank Gore's rushing share is 30%, and he's only seen one target. But their matchup against Oakland is juicy. They're at home, and Oakland has allowed the highest success rate to opposing running backs this year. I mention success rate all the time on this show, but for those who are new, it's just the percentage of positive expected points runs made by a running back. If it was a play that helped the team positively, it's deemed a success. I think Miami takes a ground-and-pound approach, and Kenyon Drake, to me, is a solid play. Frank Gore is more of a desperation play. I also think we may see a bounce back from Rex Burkhead this week. Now, hear me out. In week one, things were absolutely fine for Burkhead's usage. The Patriots were in a positive script, and Burkhead ended up playing about half of New England's snaps while seeing 58% of their rushes and 8% of the team's targets. That's strong usage in an offense that's bound to score points. Last week, though, everything changed. It was a late week call for him and whether or not he'd play, and then the Patriots trailed for basically all of the game against Jacksonville. That led to a big workload for James White. White played 56% of their snaps. Sony Michel also entered the picture, and that didn't help things. But Burkhead did see two more snaps than Michel, and I think that we can probably say that Burkhead is the most likely to play the goal line role in New England this year. James White is more of a pass catcher, and Sony Michel has documented fumbling issues. We just haven't seen that yet because New England has only run one goal line play this season, and it was a pass. Eventually, that will regress considering the Patriots are tied for first in goal line rushes over the last 3 years. And the matchup this week for Burkhead is against the Lions, who have now been gashed in two consecutive weeks on the ground. The matchup calls for Burkhead and Michel more than it does for James White. So I think it could be a Burkhead game. I understand there's risk involved, but he's not a bad flex option. The last player I want to mention that I like this week is Corey Clement. Both Darren Sproles and Jay Ajayi are banged up, which means the backfield could be Clement's this weekend at home against Indianapolis. But even if Jay Ajayi plays, there's no telling if he'll carry his typical workload. And the Eagles would probably use Clement as a receiver out of the backfield even if Ajayi was active. And that's where things get really, really interesting. Carson Wentz is set to return this week, and it would make sense for him to play a little bit conservatively right off the bat. That means the potential for lower average depth of target throws, or targets to Corey Clement. And Indianapolis thus far has been getting crushed by running backs through the air. Week 1 saw Joe Mixon with a 25% target share, while last week saw Chris Thompson catch 13 passes on 14 targets. So even if Jay Ajayi is active, Clement makes for an interesting flex play. If Ajayi is out, then Clement should be in your lineup. A player I'm low on this week, and really most weeks, is Derrick Henry. I just don't know how you can trust his situation right now. He has one target through two games, he's played only 36% of Tennessee's snaps, and Tennessee is a big underdog at Jacksonville this week. When you're afraid of whether or not Tennessee's going to win, then you know it's more than likely going to be a Deion Lewis week and not a Derrick Henry one. Game script can always go in the other direction, like we saw with Chris Thompson and Adrian Peterson last week. But the problem is that even when game script has favored Derrick Henry so far this year, like last week, he's still not guaranteed to perform. He still saw just four more rushes than Deion Lewis did in week two. You can confidently bench him this week. I think we've got to worry about how games will go for Royce Freeman right now too. Week 1 saw a relatively close game between the Seahawks and Broncos, and in that game, Freeman handled 47% of Denver's rushes, and he played 39% of their snaps. He played more snaps than both Philip Lindsay and Devontae Booker, though it was close between him and Lindsay. In Week 2, a game that Denver had to come back and win, Freeman's snap rate dropped to 24%, and he only carried the ball 8 times. He's just very clearly not the pass-catching back on this Denver Broncos team. He's the bruiser. He's seen the most goal line work for the team, so that's a plus, but it's a situation like a lot of early down backs in the league, where you have to worry about them in games where they could trail. And that might be the case this week with Denver traveling to Baltimore for an early 1 p.m. start as 5-point underdogs. My deep play of the week is Theo Riddick, and I think it's pretty obvious as to why. Detroit isn't favored in their game against New England, and if they're trailing, they're throwing. And if they're throwing, they're dumping the ball off a lot to Theo Riddick, who has an 18% target share in the offense to start the year thanks to those negative game scripts. Detroit has seen by far the highest pass-to-rush attempt ratio this year, and they've even got the highest one in neutral game script situations. And in the red zone, they've got a 16 pass-to-run ratio. They've run 17 plays, and 16 of them have been passes in the red zone. And it's because they've trailed. So Riddick should give you a nice floor this week, and maybe he'll walk into the end zone too. And at the very least, you should consider him as a flex in PPR formats. I really had a hard time finding guys that I disagreed with consensus on this week at wide receiver. Like, I would have talked about DeSean Jackson maybe, but he's ranked pretty high across the industry, and I actually still do worry a bit about the fact that he's seen a sub-15% target share, and he's playing like half of the team's snaps. But there are two fringe-type guys that I'm higher on, and the first is Will Fuller. I talked about Fuller on my 15 Transactions podcast earlier this week, but it's gotten to the point where we've sort of overreacted to his negative regression. Like, of course he's not going to score 7 times every 4 games, but he's the number 2 option in the Texans offense, he's a deep ball threat, and Deshaun Watson loves to throw it deep. Watson is actually throwing it 15 or more air yards at a higher rate this year than he did last year, and last year he led the league in percentage of passes that went deep. In week 3, Fuller gets the Giants, a defense that really hasn't been tested this year and shouldn't scare you on paper. I guess I just see Will Fuller as a higher floor guy than most do. And he always has the upside of catching a bomb for a touchdown. I also like Sammy Watkins this week. He's now played roughly 87% of Kansas City's snaps on the year, and he has a 22% target share within the offense. Those are really solid numbers. What I like specifically about this matchup is that Watkins has been moved all around the field this year, and he's actually played about 43% of his snaps from the slot. He's been in the slot more than Tyreek Hill has. And when he's there this week, he'll see San Francisco slot corner Kaywan Williams, who's allowed the second most yards in the slot so far this year. Now granted, he's faced Adam Thielen and Golden Tate, but Williams had one of the worst yards allowed per snap in the slot last year too. And even when Watkins isn't lined up there, he should be absolutely fine. We're talking about a player who's seeing volume in an offense that's projected to score a lot of points this week. Someone I'm not very high on in week 3 is Kenny Stills. The matchup looks decent enough on paper, but Oakland actually ranks 4th in success rate allowed to wide receivers this season, and that's after facing the Rams and the Broncos. Those are a lot of good wide receivers that they faced. Rashawn Melvin has graded out well according to Pro Football Focus, and that's who Kenny Stills will likely see a lot this weekend. And then Stills himself, unfortunately, isn't a lock to see a ton of volume. So far in the year, he has a sub-16% target share in an offense that's not providing a ton of passing volume. Like I said earlier, this is a matchup that someone like Kenyon Drake can exploit. And since Miami, a team with a 0.86 pass-to-run ratio and neutral game scripts this year, they want to be balanced offensively, that could limit Stills' volume. Corey Davis is another player I'd try to not throw into my lineup this week. Not much needs to be said about the Jaguars' cornerbacks. It's hard to find better ones in the league. And with the Titans' quarterback situation being up in the air, I worry about Davis just laying an egg in this one, despite the fact that he's had really strong peripheral numbers to start the season. My deep play of the week at wide receiver is James Washington. The Steelers and Bucks have a high over-under on the week, and as I noted earlier, the Steelers have been one of the most pass-friendly teams in neutral game scripts to start the year. So enter James Washington, who played as the team's number 3 receiver in week 2. He ran only 6 fewer routes than Antonio Brown and 5 fewer than Juju Smith-Schuster. That means Washington will be out on the field looking for targets against a beatable and banged up Tampa Bay secondary. And here's the other thing about James Washington. He's a big play receiver. He was a monster at creating big plays in college. And so far this year, Tampa Bay has allowed 8 deep ball plays, tied with Pittsburgh for 5th most in football. Like I do each week, a tight end in defense, I won't give you guys players to sit, but rather guys that I like or players that I like that you can add off the waiver wire right away. One of those guys is Ian Thomas. Cincinnati allowed the 8th most yards to the tight end position in 2017, and so far in 2018, they've allowed the 4th most. In place of Greg Olsen last week, Thomas played roughly 96% of Carolina snaps, and he actually ran the 2nd most routes at the tight end position across the league. Given the matchup, he's a nice deep streamer for tight end needy teams. You could also go and look at the Steelers' tight ends as streamers as well, but if I were to choose one of them between Vance McDonald and Jesse James, I wouldn't go with Jesse James. I'd go with Vance McDonald. McDonald and James each saw 5 targets last week, but James was the one who ended up producing. McDonald, though, ran one more route than Jesse James did, and McDonald in general is the better pass catcher between the two tight ends. If you remember over the offseason, he was the one who was being hyped up in the Pittsburgh offense. An injury derailed his start, but there's a chance that he continues to be more involved as the season moves forward. So I would prefer him in a plus matchup than Jesse James this week. My 2 streaming defense picks this week are Dallas and Cleveland. I already talked through why I like Dallas when I talked about Russell Wilson. They've got a matchup at the line of scrimmage where they could generate sacks, but at the same time, this game could be low scoring given the pace that these two teams play. That should provide a floor, while the pass rush could provide a ceiling. I just wish that Dallas was playing at home. That's my biggest fear with the Cowboys. And then with Cleveland, I think a lot of people are scared to play them because they're the Browns. But they've been pretty strong defensively. They've held the Steelers and Saints to pretty average performances. Now they're at home, they're favorites, and they're playing in a game with a low over-under against a rookie quarterback who's thrown 3 picks and has been sacked 5 times so far this year. You could do far worse than the Browns' defense this week. That's going to be it for today's matchup show, though. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And make sure you're following me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you tomorrow during the mailbag episode.